listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk, right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch,
On the Couch
with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And happy day to you all, as usual. Good morning, it's your friendly psychologist. That's me, Dr. Michelle. As I am with you every week to help you out with stuff, present fabulous authors, give you information, just have a great time, basically. I'm going to be answering a lot of listeners' questions. A lot of folks wrote me last week about some of their issues going on, but as I mentioned last week, I have this fabulous author that I've been wanting to get on my show, and I was lucky enough to finally have him respond and get me here, and amazing. You've probably seen him on many national talk shows. I'm talking about Gay Hendricks. Yeah, the author of The Big Leap. This is his latest big book, and you will enjoy what you hear, because I had a chance to read this, and it's really taking your life literally to the next level. It's about conquering your hidden fears. And, you know, we in old school psychology hear this all the time. It's what we hear. You know, it's all the time what we hear. So this is going to a new level, and this is really going to help all you out. So we're going to be talking to Gay in just a little bit. Also, I'm going to be answering some of your questions, like I said. And if you would like to respond to some of the stuff I have to say on the air here, or if you have questions or problems or issues or whatever on your own, you can find me on my website. It's drmichelletherapy.com. Dr. Michelle with two L's. DR. You just abbreviate that. drmichelletherapy.com. And or you can link to my email address, which is docmichelle@aol.com. So let me know what's on your mind. You know, comments, questions, problems. And let me establish this right off the bat here. You and I do not have a therapeutic relationship. We are here for information, some advice possibly, fun, learning, having a great time. That's what it's all about. So do go ahead and respond to me. I'd love to hear from you. We're going to be talking about a couple of things a little bit later. I got an email from a guy who says his girlfriend says he has a real anger problem. He doesn't think he does. Sounds like he does. But I don't know him, and I can't judge that, but I'm just going to go by what he says to me about some of the things he does. So I'm going to respond to him as well. And we have somebody else who wrote me. We can get to that, I'm sure, a little bit later. She talks about how she may be a little too vulnerable and gullible about the men she picks. She doesn't understand why she cannot find a guy who wants to commit to her. And so we'll find out a little bit more about some of her issues and her fears and maybe some of the things she's thinking about when she's picking these guys. So there's some really great detailed emails that I received. So we'll be looking forward to that as well. And if you'd like to call in the show today, that'd be awesome. We also have, like I said, my wonderful guest calling in, Gay Hendricks, author of The Big Leap. Let me go online right now, see if we can pull him up on the air. And good morning, you're with Dr. Michelle. Hi, are you there?
Hi, it's Gay Hendricks.
Hey, Gay, thank you so much for calling in the show this morning. It's wonderful to talk with you.
My pleasure.
I've seen you and I've heard you, and it's really my pleasure to have you on my talk show this morning. And I've read your book. It's called The Big Leap, folks, as I discussed a little earlier. It's conquering your hidden fear and taking your life to the next level. And that's perfect. That's exactly what it says. So I learned a lot. You know, I've been a psychologist for many years. when I read this book, I said, yes, there you go. It is the next level, Gay. There you go. You're going to a newer way of thinking. It's fresh. That's what I like about it. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Let's check it out, folks. First of all, why did you write this book? Why did you write this big, the Big Leap book, first of all?
Well, there are a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
One is that this is a time where I think we really need to be making big leaps.
Yeah.
As I travel around the world, I've been around the world over 30 times now, teaching and giving talks and that kind of thing over the past 35 years. And one thing that I've really noticed is that the pain of people not expressing their full potential,
mm-hmm.
I think, is much greater than the pain of poverty and hunger and those kinds of things. I mean, those are terrible things when you're experiencing them, but as I look around the world, I see many people who are well fed but are in a great deal of pain because they're not expressing who they really are. They're not expressing their full potential. They're not getting out of what I call the zone of incompetence and getting up into where they're really fulfilling their potential, where they're expressing their genius in the world. And I think this is a time where we're being called forth to bring our genius to the world, and that there is so many problems that beset us that we really need to call on the collective genius of human beings to create a new world. And so I'd say that's the big reason I wrote the book, is to show people exactly how to do that.
Ah, that's wonderful. You know, there are a lot of people who come to me and call in on the show who've had problems about getting success or feeling successful or feeling worthy or bringing their genius, or, you know, they've struggled for so many years. So, and no matter how many books, how many cognitive behavioral therapy tools we use, they just can't make that switch within themselves, you know, to change over. So what do you think is going on with these people?
Well, I think that there's no human being that has ever been born that is fundamentally bad or fundamentally flawed in any way.
Yes.
We think we are. You know, if certain things happen to you in childhood, if you have various things that, you know, impact you, or failures or losses, or it doesn't even have to be in childhood, it could be yesterday, things happen to us that lead us to believe that we're fundamentally flawed in some way, but that's just a false belief based on something that occurred since you were born. And what we need to do is realize that we have no fundamental flaws in us, that what we need to do is let go of the idea that we're fundamentally wrong in some way or fundamentally flawed, and put our attention on how we can express our true genius now. And I think it needs to be, you know, a lot of us think we need to go back and repair something in the past in order to have a more successful present.
Right.
I think it's important to acknowledge the past and the effect on us, but really there's nothing in your past that would prevent you from spending 1 minute more or 10 minutes more today doing your genius, doing what you're uniquely suited to do.
I think it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I imagine you counsel your clients the same way, that the only thing stopping them is their thought that they can be stopped in some way. And we need to get past that so that we can really put our attention on expressing our genius right now in the present.
Exactly. I do totally agree with you. I mean, it's great to go psychodynamic and you know, have people, you know, delve deep into some of the pain and the, you know, messages they received. But sometimes enough is enough. Too many people, I think, are living there in their minds, and there's no matter, you know, whenever they go back to the old pain and the old hurt and the old lack of self-worth, they're there in their mind. So what I love your book, because what it does is it brings people out of, okay, fine, acknowledge it, but let's talk about right now, because that's all you have, you know, and moving on. So what you're talking about, you in your book, you talk about most people's inner thermostat, you know, that sabotages their success and their love and, you know, the joy in their life. So what are you talking about there?
It's what I call the upper limit problem.
Uh-huh.
And what it's all about is that many of us get our thermostat set too low when we're growing up about what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like there was a scientific study some years ago that I heard about that they scientists raised some fish in an aquarium, and they put a plexiglass shield across one part of the aquarium so that the fish had to stay on one side, and if they tried to cross over to the other side, they would bump up against it, even though there was nothing visible there. It was an invisible shield. They kept bumping up against it, and eventually the scientists could remove the shield, and still the fish wouldn't go across to the other side because they had internalized that limitation. They thought that was the way the world was, that they had to stop at that place in the water. And so I think that many of us go around with an equivalent kind of thing in our minds, that we have this upper limit thermostat setting on how much love and how much success and how much positive energy we will allow ourselves to enjoy. And when we then later on in life, if we exceed that, we then find some way to sabotage ourselves, to kind of knock ourselves back down beneath the level of the thermostat setting that was set long ago before you could think for yourself. And what the Big Leap is really telling people is that here is a way where you can reset your own thermostat and set it as high as you want consciously now without reference to whatever happened before.
So what, Gay, what are some of the signs that people should look out for that may indicate that their upper limit problems are going on within them?
One thing to look out for is to notice worry thoughts. And particularly, you know, many of us go around worrying, and we think there's some good reason that we're worrying, but I bet if you really study your worry thoughts, I did that. I started really looking into my worry thoughts because I was a consummate worrier, and I realized that 99.9% of my worry thoughts didn't have anything to do with anything that was potentially real. It was all based on fantasies I had about the future or worries I had about the past, but it wasn't about anything that had anything to do with reality. And what I noticed was that I would go into worry thoughts right after something good happened. You know, like if I had a big breakthrough or if I had some win or I made extra money, I would immediately start worrying about some terrible thing that was going to happen. And I realized that those worry thoughts were a direct symptom of my upper limit problem, that when I would come up against more success than I had had in the past, I knew I could bring myself back down by worrying a lot. So that's a big one.
You know, so many people do that. I hear about that all the time. It's the self-sabotage. I do it. We all do it. And it's such a it's such an easy habit, you know, all the time. Do you think this is a, like a subconscious thing we do?
Yes, it's definitely a subconscious thing because what happens, like for example, let's say you've been given a lot of messages when you were growing up. Let's say you grew up in a family, there were brothers and sisters, and you were given the message kind of subtly maybe or maybe even out loud not to outshine the others. That's one of the common messages that many people get is don't outshine the others. You know, don't act too brilliant or don't act too artistic because other people will feel bad. And so what happens then is later on in life we hold ourselves back based on that old fear of outshining someone that was maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago. And so what we need to do is look at where those things may have originated. But, you know, not spend a lot of time dwelling on that. It's kind of like the way I tell people to explore the past is to think of it like shining a flashlight in a closet that you haven't looked into for a long time. You know, you shine your light around, you get a sense of what's in there, but, you know, don't spend the rest of your life in the closet just shining the light around all the time. Just clean out the closet and move on, you know, take what's valuable from it and move on.
So it's kind of enlightenment, like, okay, oh, that's where I got that from. I see, yes, that's what was happening. Those were the messages. And say, okay, I get it. Now what?
That's right. Okay. Yes, one of the my mantras that I teach all of my clients is that was then, this is now. That was then, this is now. You know, because there is just because you couldn't do a chin-up when you were in the eighth grade gym class, which I couldn't, by the way, doesn't mean that I can't do one now, which I can, you know. So somewhere along the line, I got a different belief system and got so I could do a chin-up. And so you don't ever want to let yourself get limited by what happened a long time ago. You kind of want to shine the light on it and then say, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. That's where that started. Well, now I'm going to do something different.
So now we're going to do something different. So here's the big question. This is the big question. that everybody's been waiting to hear you answer. How do we start? How do we start to make the big leap? How do we begin?
Yes. Well, all conscious change begins with a commitment. Mm. You know, it's like that moment in a 12-step group when a person for the first time stands up in front of that group meeting in the bottom of a basement of a church or something like that and right. says, "My name's John and I'm an alcoholic."
Yes.
And so in that moment, a commitment is born, a commitment not to take a drink that day.
Yes.
And then the next day, a commitment to not take a drink that day. So commitment is the real door opener. Mm. And so what I do with people is I invite them first to make some really simple, kind of almost small-sounding commitments, like, would you make a commitment to extending the periods of time with things going well in your life?
Uh-huh.
And the reason I do that is because it's important to start with something manageable and small, but it also needs to be big enough that you don't know exactly how to do it.
Uh-huh.
A big commitment is a sign of a good commitment is if it's something you really want, but you really don't exactly know how you're going to go about it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So when I ask people here in my office to make a commitment to extending the periods of time when things go well in their life, 9 times out of 10 they'll say, "Yeah, but I'm not sure how to do that." And that's when I jump in and I say, just make the commitment,
yes.
and making the commitment will open up the ways to do it. It can't be done the other way around. You can't say, well, show me how it's going to be done, and then I'll make the commitment. It just doesn't work that way.
Right, right. So there are some questions in your book. You say that there are 4 really important questions that people need to ask themselves in order to make that transition after they make the commitment, make the transition into what you call the zone of genius, starting to find exactly what their gifts are and just allowing them to happen. So maybe you could share with the folks some of those questions.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first questions that I ask people is, what do you most love to do?
Mm.
This begins to orient people toward their zone of genius, uh-huh. because I bet if you looked into your childhood, you'd even see that there was something that you loved to do above all else.
Mm.
You know, like when I asked Michael mm. Dell
yes.
what he liked to uh-huh. do, or like the first present he got when he was a little boy, mm. right away he said he got a calculator, and it was the first thing he really got excited about, because the first thing he did was take it apart to see how it worked, how it could possibly work.
Amazing.
You know, and he's still to this day, even though now he's a multi-billionaire and
right.
has a company with 30 or 40,000 employees,
yeah.
what turns him on more than anything else is figuring out how things work and how
uh-huh.
to use that to improve things. And
uh-huh.
so you look into your childhood to see what kinds of things you really love to
uh-huh.
do.
Uh-huh.
Like for me, I set up a little cardboard box uh-huh. counseling center in the corner of my grandma's living room when
wow.
I was 5 or 6 years old, and it said problems on it,
oh.
and I sat in my box because I like to solve problems.
It's kind of like Lucy in the Peanuts cartoon thing, you know, psychiatric help 5 cents or something. But no,
I can actually remember the
yeah.
day my mother saw that Peanuts cartoon for
yes.
the first time and brought it over to me and said, "Hey, look at this. You know, this is like you were when you were 5 years old."
That is cool.
I'd actually forgotten about it by then. But,
yeah.
you know, it was good training ground for a psychotherapist later because, you know,
yes.
to this day, I mean, when I'm sitting with somebody or a group of people or mm-hmm. business executives or whatever,
mm-hmm.
as long as we're discussing the most important things and trying to find solutions
mm-hmm.
to the
mm-hmm.
most important things that are going on in that family or that person or
mm-hmm.
that company, I'm happy. I never look at my watch during that.
Yes.
You know, it's just
yes.
timeless.
It's yes.
fun.
It is fun. I know what you're... But isn't that cool, though, that you had this passion when you were so young? You had the ability to have empathy, and you have the ability to pull yourself away from their stuff and try to just give them, you know, some really helpful solutions. How wonderful that is, that that's been with you all these years. So here you are, famous author, and you've helped out many, many people, many successful and, of course, superstars, and it's amazing, you know. So there you go. You're living your book. You're a perfect example of living exactly what you're sharing with other people.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you seeing that.
Yeah.
Another question that I love to ask people is, like if you have a present job right now, mm-hmm. what aspect of that job do you do that doesn't seem like work? Mm-hmm. Because if you work 8-hour day, let's say as a lawyer or an accountant or whatever, I've worked with probably, at this point, well over 1,000 business executives, and right. I always ask them, what is it in your work that doesn't seem like work? Because that is a cue to what your real genius is. Hmm. Like I'll have somebody, they'll say, well, you know, like 7 hours of the day, I'm doing the stuff that just has to be done, but an hour a day, I get to work with people in a counseling situation, mm-hmm. or I get to help a younger executive figure out how to maximize their work life, or mm-hmm. something like that. And it, whenever I do that, I see the person's eyes light up, and they get a certain look on their face, and that always tells me that that's a cue to their genius. That's right. what they really ought to be doing more of.
Right.
And one of the things that I talk about in The Big Leap mm-hmm. Is that I don't think you need to jump in a sailboat and sail off to Tahiti and quit your job and all
right,
that kind
right.
of stuff. I think you just need to spend 10 more minutes a day mm-hmm. doing your genius.
Mm.
And then next week, maybe spend 15 more minutes mm-hmm. a day doing it, and gradually work up to when you're spending more than half your time doing it. And that's the way I did it. I didn't pedal off to Tahiti or anything like that.
Right.
I just started doing my genius more a little bit every day.
Right.
And pretty soon I was spending most of my life doing that.
That is wonderful. So it's you ask yourself, and I see here in my little talking points, you have them also ask in their work, what produces the highest ratio of abundance and satisfaction to the amount of time spent? So that you equate with finding their genius, because genius brings joy.
That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And genius is something we need more of.
Mm-hmm.
We need, we've got plenty of excellence in mm-hmm. the world. Mm-hmm. We've got plenty of competence in the world, and we've certainly got a lot of incompetence in the world. But mm-hmm. what I want to do is even help people who are in their zone of excellence get out of that and spend more of their time in their zone of genius.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they do that, they not only become more satisfied themselves, mm-hmm. but they become an inspiration to people around them. And to me, life is mm-hmm. at its best when I'm expanding in my life purpose mm-hmm. while at the same time facilitating other people in expanding in their life purpose.
Uh-huh.
That's life at its absolute
yes.
best.
Yes. Yeah, that's joy. I mean, that's loving your life. That's not looking at the minutes and just taking up time. You know, we all have responsibilities, and we all have things we don't love doing all the time. But if you can, I get what your big leap is about, is finding more and more moments when you can experience these genius moments and the joy and the abundance and the satisfaction. So...
And that's what my life is all about, and I know it's what your life is all about, too, and I think it's something the world needs more of right now.
I hear you. And so the fourth question I see here is, what is my unique ability? So people have to define exactly what their unique ability is, because everyone has
yes, and,
something.
And we're not talking about unique in right. the entire world. I mean, there's 6 billion people on the
right.
planet, so there might be 100 million other people that have that same unique
right.
ability, but like in your family or your organization or your company or your division, what is it that you do that nobody else can quite do
mm-hmm.
like you do?
Mm-hmm.
And put your attention on finding what that is,
right.
finding what that is, and gradually doing a little bit more of it,
mm-hmm.
10 minutes more of it every day is my magic pill, so to speak, that
uh-huh.
I recommend people do.
Uh-huh.
When they do 10 minutes more of it every day, their lives start to change.
Yes. It is also of the philosophy that the more you do, the more you do see changes. It's almost like the idea of the quantum physics. You know, you're creating, you're manifesting, you're creating more and more and bringing that to you, exactly what you want to do. And the more you do it, the more it comes.
Yeah, well, one of the biggest psychological principles I ever discovered is that life chases success. In other mm-hmm. words, if you open up more to what you're uniquely suited to do,
mm-hmm.
is that automatically makes success chase you. You know,
mm-hmm.
it kind of begins to draw success into your life.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
mm-hmm.
if you're not doing what you most love to do, life will kind of avoid you. You know, yes. It doesn't chase you with success.
Yes, yes. It really makes a lot of sense. And I don't think I've ever read anyone who's put it exactly like that before. So there's a really cool part in your book. It's called Living in Einstein Time. And I don't want to give away the whole book, because I want folks to read it, because it really will be a wonderful experience, and they'll learn a lot. But what do you mean when you talk about living in Einstein time?
Well, Einstein had a great one-minute explanation of the theory of relativity. Somebody mm-hmm. asked him how it actually worked in a practical example, and he said, well, an hour with your beloved goes by like a minute, mm-hmm. whereas a minute sitting on a hot stove goes by like an hour. Mm-hmm. And what he was getting at there is that when you're experiencing love and when you're opening up to the present, you expand. The cells of your body are expanding. Yes. Like if you're with your beloved, they're expanding because they want to be in unity with your beloved. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're in pain, if you're sitting on a hot stove, or if a mosquito is biting you, you're contracting away from that. You're trying to get away from that mm-hmm. experience. You're trying to not be where you are. Mm-hmm. And when that occurs, time slows down to a crawl. Yes. Like if you remember being, I remember being horrendously bored for a lot of my time in high school and just looking at the clock, you know, like 60 times a minute I would look at the clock.
Exactly.
And it seemed to make the clock just stand still.
Exactly.
And very painful.
Yes.
So what Einstein time is all about is finding a new relationship with time that allows you to grow as much time as you need to do the things that you really love to do. Mm. You'll never have enough time to do all the things you don't really want to do anyway. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you put your attention on what you most love to do, you begin to build a new relationship with time, where time will expand to give you the amount of time that you need to do it.
Yes.
And that's what I call Einstein time. I want people to get out of that victim relationship with time, where they are thinking of themselves as time as a pressure or an oppressor.
Yes.
So they're going around saying, oh, I don't have enough time to do that, or, oh, gee, I'd love to, but I don't have more time.
Yes, yes.
I want people to get out of that.
It's a very difficult concept. You know, time is such an abstract concept, and you have to create your own, you know, the thought process. And you know, exploring what you want and what you need. It is about time, but it's true. When you're enjoying yourself so much, there time is gone. When you're in the now, it's that now concept.
Yes, and one thing I asked my clients to do is to put themselves on a radical diet of no time complaints, even little tiny ones. I ask them to start monitoring their time complaints and gradually eliminate those. Like, for example, how many times during the course of the day do you hear somebody say, oh, I don't have time to do that right now, or I wish I had time to do that, or gosh, why don't I have time to do that?
And,
you know, it's an amazing thing to suddenly realize that you're in charge of time. You're where time comes from.
Yes.
You know, it's not an oppressive force from outside. It's
inside
us, and it's up to us to come up with a better relationship with it.
I've never heard it put like that. I just love that idea. And I don't know if you want to share this, you know, and take up too much time on this, but because it's a wonderful secret that I want people to check out in the book. But within it, you're offering a practical exercise on how to diffuse their fear. It really is a breathing exercise. Moments ago, you were talking about, you know, breathing and taking that time to turn fear into excitement. And I don't know if people understand that.
Yeah, one of my early influences back during the 60s and 70s, early 70s, was Fritz Perls, who was a great psychiatrist and the founder of Gestalt Therapy. And he had this one quotation which just knocked me out, which was, he said it kind of offhandedly once. He said, fear is excitement without the breath. And I remember trying to figure that out. What the heck did he mean by that? And then I tried it out in a very practical setting.
Yeah.
I was on an airplane, and I started feeling some anxiety. It was a very bumpy flight, you know, and there was lightning all around and everything. And that quote of Dr. Pearl's popped into my mind, and I started actually, instead of
kind of clutching my stomach tight, I started just participating with the anxiety I was feeling. Mm-hmm. I would take some nice deep breaths into it, and within a few breaths, I started to feel better. Mm. And after 5 minutes or so, I was excited about what was going on. I was kind of enjoying the plane being tossed around. And that's an extreme kind of circumstance,
that
but
is.
I became a kind of a true believer of the power
yes.
of breathing. And,
yes.
and science tells us that it only takes about 3 or 4
yeah.
easy, deep breaths to begin to change our stress chemistry
it
in
does.
Our body. It begins to melt the stress chemistry. And so, believe it or not, I wrote a whole book on breathing back when I was a university professor. I wrote a book called Conscious Breathing. And,
yes.
All my professor friends were ridiculing me tremendously during the writing of it, because they'd come by me in the hall and they'd all go like Darth Vader or something like that, and so they needled me endlessly.
But right, right.
It became a big bestseller, so I guess I had the last laugh.
There
the
you
last
go.
Breath.
The last breath, exactly. So you tell them, don't forget to breathe while you're reading this and laughing, you know. But no, that's so true. I mean, every, you know, meditation, autogenic therapy, progressive muscle relaxation, every stress management exercise that they've had since whenever, it's begin with breathing. That's the key. You know, that's where you regulate your autonomic nervous system, and that's the whole key right there. A lot of people forget to breathe.
That's right. You clutch that belly and hold it tight and don't let it go, and boy, I'll tell you, it makes you miserable very quickly.
Yes, it does. It's really true. All right, so we're moving on, and we're feeling better, and we're defining what we need to. We've asked ourselves the questions about what we love to do and what doesn't seem like work, and what brings you the abundance and satisfaction, and kind of checking out unique ability and learning to breathe and getting through some of these fears. So people start, you know, they take that 10 minutes a day and they start opening themselves up to doing things that are feeling really good and getting into the zone of genius. Then there's a little bit of scariness in that. There's a little bit of self-defeating behavior that happens, right?
Yes, what happens oftentimes as you begin to expand in success
mm-hmm.
is you push past that upper limit thermostat setting and tend to do little self-sabotage things. Like
yeah.
I've had any number of clients tell me that, you know, they begin to, like one person told me a while back that he had a big speech he was going to give to a
right.
bigger audience than he'd ever spoken to. And on the morning of the speech, he got a big sore throat and laryngitis. And a happy ending of the story, though, was that he suddenly realized what he was doing. He was upper limiting himself, and that his unconscious mind was afraid that he wouldn't be able to, you know, make a success of it, and it had dreamed up this sore throat and laryngitis to try to kind of keep him safe.
Yes.
And so I really, and fortunately, he was able to see that and let go of the sore throat. And a lot of times, you know, the illnesses don't have to last. You know, last time every time I feel myself like about to come down with a cold or something,
yes.
I just take 10 or 15 minutes and I sit down and I do a little breathing
mm-hmm.
and I do a little mm-hmm. thinking about, why would I be wanting to get sick right now?
Yes. What? Yes.
And I haven't, as a result, I haven't actually had a cold now in, I keep track of this, so I haven't had a cold since 1996. So what is
wow.
that? Years. And I think it has a lot to do with if I yes. feel those little scratchy throat symptoms or stuffy nose,
mm-hmm.
I kind of sit down and I pay some attention to it right there on the spot and kind of get the message, so I don't have to lay around with a stuffy nose for 3 or 4 days.
Isn't that amazing how much our mind affects our physiological state? I mean, I work with folks who, you know, they have the panic disorder. And of course, they've inherited some of the, you know, chemical problems. But I mean, truly, it's all about changing your thought and changing your breathing and changing your life and thinking about what you may be sabotaging, what you may be fearing, because you're pushing past, you know, you are turning up the thermostat. It's getting scary. So your body's starting to shut down on you for some reason. But you just got to push past that a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely, and just to remind everybody too that you don't have to do it all at once.
Right.
You just need to start favoring your genius a little more, a minute or two each day, an hour or two every month, and you'll see magic begin to happen as a result of that.
Yes, exactly. And people really, like you say in your book, they kind of have to be on a lookout for signs of the upper limit problems every day, so you don't kind of slip back into those old patterns again. But don't you say that the more you become familiar with it, the easier it gets?
Yeah, in fact, in my own life, when I first started focusing on this 30-some years ago, mm-hmm. I noticed that in the beginning, I would sabotage myself mm-hmm. for days at a time.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And it would take me days to kind of dig myself back out of
right,
it.
Right, right.
But now I notice one of those little upper limit things happening and take a few breaths, and it just moves on through. So
yes.
It's kind of like learning to... learning to drive a Ferrari or something like that at 100 miles an hour, you have to pay a little bit more attention than
yeah.
if you're just driving around on a skateboard at 2 miles an hour.
That's really true. And something else that I have seen, and I know you address here in your book, is that when people start acknowledging and transitioning into their zone of genius, they start improving their life, they're more joyous, things start happening in their other relationships. Sometimes relationships suffer when you're starting to really be more joyful and succeed and working within your genius. Why does that happen?
Well, one thing is that most of us don't realize that in a relationship, growth rates are always very different. One person is growing at a faster or slower pace than mm-hmm. the other person. It's very rare to have yeah. both people that are expanding at the same rate. And so one person is going to be making breakthroughs faster than the other, nine times out of ten. And so what happens a lot of times is in relationships, many people have kind of made an unconscious agreement to limit each other.
Yes.
And
yes.
To stay safe and stay within that zone mm-hmm. that's below the zone of genius. And
right.
so what happens then is when the relationship begins to prosper and thrive, oftentimes we get scared that that we're going to go past our upper limit, and so mm-hmm. we'll create an argument or something like
yes.
that to kind of bring the relationship back down.
Right.
And
right.
most of the time, arguments in relationship aren't about anything real. I mean, they may seem on the surface to be about money or
yeah.
sex or the kids
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that,
yeah.
but we have a saying around here that sexual arguments are never about sex and money arguments are never about money. You know, they're always about that upper limit problem
yeah.
of people starting an argument because they don't know that it's okay to feel good for longer and longer periods of time.
Right. That's really... I love that. And it is. It's about, you got to sabotage yourself again because it's not okay to feel good. Nope, not okay. You know, we have that little subconscious thing going on. Nope, not okay. Let's mess things up in our lives again. But it's constant practice of some of the things you suggest here. And couldn't you share with the folks out there, some of the folks who you have worked with who are very high profile? You've worked with presidents. You've worked with actors, actresses, very highly successful people.
Well, yes, and I've been really blessed in that regard to mm-hmm. be around some incredibly brilliant people. And that brings up an interesting thing, though. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, like one time my wife and I were at a concert, a Bonnie Raitt concert, and she acknowledged us from the stage and everything. And so people were saying, you know, what on earth kind of problem might a person like that have, you know?
Right.
But, you know, you don't have to be sick in order to get better. You can be extremely successful and want to go beyond any upper limit.
Right.
You know, so somebody like Bonnie that I mentioned in the book, you know, she was an incredible, excellent blues singer.
Oh, marvelous.
In that genre.
Yes,
marvelous.
Yes.
Any album.
Right.
And yet she wanted to go beyond that. And so she looked at that whole situation and kind of transcended it and went into the zone of mainstream pop and now fills up stadiums because she was willing to kind of take that big leap out of her zone of excellence and
yes.
into her zone of genius.
Yes, yes. That's so cool that you helped her. And so many other people here. I'm seeing the list of some of the other celebrities and some of the other high-profile people. Of course, good heavens, the Dell, like whom you talked about earlier, Hewlett-Packard, management, Fortune 500 executives. You've helped people with Motorola. I mean, all of these amazing, successful people achieve a higher level of genius. So that's wonderful. That's great. So
yeah,
Yeah. So to summarize it up, folks.
It lets us know. It's kind of comforting to know that even somebody who's a, you know, multi-billionaire like Michael Dell is still interested in making improvements in their lives. You know, it's inspiring to me that a lot of people would say, gosh, if I had $1 billion, I wouldn't even think about my personal growth ever again. But one of the things that is true of a lot of people who have really distinguished themselves is they're focused on the learning opportunities in every moment.
Yes.
It's not like they only do it for 8 hours a day while they're at work. They're really curious about life and curious about learning what they can in every single moment.
Yes, yes. And taking from that and moving forward. What lesson have I learned from this, and what can I do to move forward and achieve more joy within myself and success and passion, you know? So people who are the most satisfied, happiest, and productive at work make it into that zone of genius. And folks, if you would like to really learn how to do this, Gay Hendricks' book is called The Big Leap, and it literally does help you make the transition from just living your life every day, the successes you wanted to achieve, to actually achieving those successes and finding passions. And so I would really recommend checking this book out, folks. It's taking your life to the next level. That's what it says on the front of the book right here as I'm reading it. Conquering your hidden fear, because we all have them, and making that big leap. And it's Gay Hendricks, of course. It's a New York Times bestselling book. Folks, if you want to. Gay, how can people find out more information about you and get in touch with you if they'd like to?
One good way to do it is to go to our main website that Katie and I have. It's called Hendricks.com, and that's spelled HENDRICKS.com. So that's kind of the jumping off place to all our different work. They can also go to thebigleap.net, which is a place that's all about the Big Leap book, and they can read about it there. But Hendricks.com is probably the most efficient place to go.
Great. All right, folks. There you go. It's up to you. You want to make that big leap out there, do it. Gay, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for spending time and sharing all the great ideas you have and information about your book. And I hope this has spurred on a lot of interest in my listeners, and I hope that they can get a hold of the book and anywhere, actually. They can go online. It's everywhere. Any bookstore, you can find it, folks. But I thank you so much.
All right. Blessings to you.
Oh, blessings to you, too. It's been great talking with you, and thanks for helping so many people.
Well, same to you. Thank you for being on the air here and helping so many people.
Oh, well, thanks a lot, Gay. Take good care now.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, that I've been wanting to interview Gay for quite a long time. Because, you know, he's an amazing author. And if you look at some of the other books that he's written, they'll help you out. This is like probably one of the most important transitional books to help people move on to the next level. And you don't necessarily have to be the most successful person in the world or want to be, but just finding more passion, more joy, more excitement in your life, kind of getting into that zone of genius. That's what The Big Leap is all about. All right, folks. I'm going to try to get to a couple of these listeners' emails, because I want to help some people out too today, because you wrote me and I appreciate that. I want to say thank you so much. So let me just tell you this. If you would like to write me anything, questions, comments, problems, issues, anything, you can find me at docmichelle@AOL.com. DocMichelle is D-O-C. Michelle with two L's at AOL.com, and I'll be happy to respond to you and, you know, maybe help you out with some things. So let me jump right into this, because I promised this gentleman that I would answer his question on the air today. So let's do it. And he did not give his name. So, dear Dr. Michelle, my girlfriend tells me that I have an anger problem and is telling me that I need therapy. Uh-oh. Not good. I've always been the type of person who gets mad quickly, but I don't do destructive things that are abusive or throw things, as he says. My dad used to be mad all the time, and I think I learned this from him. Well, probably you did. Probably you did. Role modeling. Kind of scary sometimes. And it's really sad to have to put up with that all the time. But anyway, He says, are there any ideas you can give me about how to handle my anger? Well, I really like the idea that your girlfriend said, maybe go to therapy. Find an anger management specialist in your area and be able to talk about it. Because if you grew up in a home like this, you know, it sounds to me like you already understand what lessons you picked up from dad, who displayed anger in front of the house. I don't know how what the dynamics between him and mom was. You didn't go into that, and your siblings, if you had any. But just keep in mind that the events of this world don't make you angry out there. You attach meanings to events that result in your anger. It's all about you. Okay, you create your anger. You create your anger. All right? You think you get really hot. You get boom. It doesn't help. So if you can find active and creative solutions for you, you will feel better. Okay? Don't forget also what happens sometimes. And this is what your anger management therapist will help you with. Usually the anger-generating thoughts, they're distorted. You know, you've heard the old stuff I've talked about, cognitive distortions, right? We really distort our anger. We attach it to a lot of other things, stuff from the past, stuff from what we didn't get, what we think we don't deserve, whatever. So you have to really get a handle on what you might be distorting. And connecting them will help reduce your anger. You know, am I really blowing this out of proportion? You know? So ultimately, your anger is caused by your belief that somebody is acting unfairly or some event is unjust to you. Something is going on where you feel like you're being dissed in some way. And, you know, the root of that is pain, old stuff, old pain. Maybe sort of get in touch with some of the old pain you're feeling. Move through it and start changing. Okay? So with your girlfriend, you might sit down and chat with her. And again, a good anger management therapist will help you with this too. If you share her perspectives regarding fairness and justice and, you know, what you need in the relationship, be assertive, not aggressive. You need to learn how to use I statements and reflective statements and things like that. So it'll help her not be so afraid of. Maybe you're creating a lot of fear in that relationship you're having too. Nobody wants to be with a rageaholic. That's really creepy. And the more you do that, either, you know, you're going to push her away or she's going to become kind of addicted to that drama. And you don't want that. That's really unhealthy. So I want you to hear this. Many times, take a look at yourself and the anger you're feeling. It really kind of serves to protect that self-esteem within yourself that feels so threatened. Right? It's not only about the role models you received when you were growing up from dad blowing up, and I don't know how really crazy angry he got, but it's also about that self-esteem. And that's what Gay Hendricks and I were talking about a little bit ago. All those little messages you got that you don't deserve success or it's not okay because it's, you know, it's better to keep a low profile. It's better not to be the one that's really out there and successful and happy and so anger many times serves to protect that self-esteem that feels threatened, right? It was, when you put it out there and you're blaming other people, it's not about them. It's about you. You have to take a look at yourself, okay? And frustration always results from your unrealistic expectation, okay? Get to like yourself. Get with a therapist, like I said, an anger management person who can help turn around your thoughts. And it's okay to be angry. It's okay. I mean, it's normal. It's a human feeling. But it's not fun. And it's not good on your physiological body. And it's not great for relationships either. Is it useful? You have to ask yourself. Okay. So when you get rid of all this irritability and this anger and these distorted thoughts you have and what you feel you deserve, and you really take a look at yourself and you help out your self-esteem a little, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel more joy, peace, productivity. You're just going to be feeling better. You know, it's no fun being with people who are angry, and it's no fun being with yourself, you know, if you're angry. So maybe hopefully that helped you out a little bit, you know, and you can take into account some of those ideas that I gave you. And I thank you so much for writing me. And by the way, folks, if you want to contact me and If you have any questions, like I said, or comments, it's docmichelle@AOL.com, docmichelle2ls@AOL.com. Or you can log on to my website and kind of find out more of what I'm about. I'm about positive life changes. You know, I'm a big cognitive behavioral person too, but it's much more than that too. A little more spiritual, as you might say. It's going within yourself and truly finding the joy. And that's drmichelletherapy.com. That's drmichelletherapy.com. And that way, you know, if you have any questions, like I said, you can contact me, link onto my email address, and maybe I can help you out. I sure hope you learned a lot today. I did. And I sure did by reading the book, The Big Leap, by Gay Hendricks. I thank Gay again for being my special guest on the show today. It's been a blast. It's really good. Go pick it up. You can find it anywhere in the bookstores. And listen, hey, I got to go. Yeah, producer says, my time is up today, for now, but I'll be back. And of course, you can download all the shows here at latalkradio.com. Anything you like, subjects are up. You want to learn about relationships, you want to learn about self-esteem, you want to learn about anger, you want to learn about depression, how to manage anxiety, or you want to read The Big Leap. You can download that too from today's show. All right, this is Dr. Michelle, and I hope you have a great week, fabulous day. And as I always say, do take care of you first. Bye-bye.
Got you on my mind again tonight. Seeing the flashing rays of coming light. Back here so I can get your name. Oh, I wouldn't know what to say to you just the same. Oh, I'll take my time. Of sound.